So today, my guest is a guy named Burt Barrow. So here's the thing about Burt. Burt was introduced to me by a guy named Kevin. Kevin works in the building that we operate all multiple of our businesses out of. So Kevin has been one of the best people to recommend guests on here. He recommended John Burdett, who is a wonderful guest, and he comes up to me on the holiday and says, "You need to meet this guy named Burt." And so before I have someone on, typically I will sit, hang out with them, have lunch, and just really see if they're a good fit. Had lunch with Burt 15 minutes in. I knew this guy would be great. So Burt has been in banking and has owned his own business, been in corporate, in and out, has a massive amount of experience, been knocked down, been got back up. Wonderful, wonderful story of resilience, and I just excited to talk with you and him about Burt. Burt, thanks for having me. Thanks for being here today.
Glad to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, so you are Birmingham, living in Birmingham, Montgomery area. Okay, so let's do this. So let's go back to like growing up. Just okay. Give me the kind of the high level version of you growing up so people can have some context about how your journey's been.
Born in Panama City.
Okay.
Dad was a pastor. We moved around a pretty
preacher's
good bit.
Preacher's kid.
PK's.
That's right.
The world, you know? All right. So we moved around a little bit.
Okay.
Was in Mobile. Then wound up in Montgomery.
Yeah.
Stayed there till I was 13 years old.
Okay.
I actually moved there when I was 13 and lived there until 3.5 years ago. Montgomery's home.
Yeah.
Montgomery's where junior high school, high school, all those years.
Yeah.
Went away to college, came to Sanford.
Okay.
Then went back to Montgomery. And then 3.5 years ago, we moved to Birmingham.
Gotcha.
And been up here. And this is where we'll be.
Sure. Let's just go ahead and fast forward. Being a preacher's kid, you come to Sanford. You get to Sanford when you're in college. People ask you, hey, what are you going to do when you get out? What did you tell them at that point?
I thought I was going to play pro ball.
Oh, yeah. All of us did.
Every kid.
All of us did.
Every
That's
kid
right.
thinks they're going to play
That's
pro
right.
ball.
That's right.
The problem was is I couldn't hit.
Yep.
I had a decent arm, but I could run.
Yeah,
okay?
Sure.
One out of three was bad.
All right? That's right.
So I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, Thomas. I knew it was something business-wise.
Okay.
Started off in accounting. Realized real quick, with the help of one of my professors, who was the head of accounting department, he let me know that wasn't my gift.
Really?
He encouraged me to never come into his classroom again.
Wow.
But it was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
I was playing baseball at the time, missing a lot of classes.
Yeah.
And accounting in those upper level classes each day builds on the other.
Sure.
And I got behind. So I changed over to just a traditional business degree, business management. Had a professor there, Dr. Marla.
Okay.
She was phenomenal. Yeah. Helped me, guide me. And so I graduated with a degree in business management, still not having a clue what I was going to do.
So tell me about your first job out of college.
Insurance.
Okay. Give me some good glimpse of that.
With MetLife
here
in Birmingham. The only thing I knew to do is I had to get on that first trip to Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way I could do that, I had to sell some policies.
Yeah.
So I grabbed every fraternity brother of mine I could and sold them a $50 a month universal life policy just so I could qualify for the trip. Got down there, got educated in that space a little bit.
Yeah.
Realized if I'm going to be in the arena where it pays to know people, I better get back home. So I moved back home, stayed in the insurance business, but Thomas, it just wasn't what I thought I was supposed to be doing.
Sure. No, I mean, I get that. Like, you're doing it, you're making money, you're probably pretty decent at it, but then all of a sudden it's like, hey, this is not for me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so had the chance to get into banking at that point. A mentor of mine sat me down and said, what do you want to do?
Right.
I don't know. I want to make money.
I want to make some money.
I want to make money. Yeah. Like I heard, everything's funny when you're making money.
That's right.
I wanted to laugh.
Yeah.
All right. So he made a phone call, got me into banking on the retail side, and I just started learning. I started listening and learning.
When you say retail, you mean?
Branch.
Branch guy, doing transactions. Just
opening deposits.
Oh, yeah, okay.
CDs,
retail banking. Got
retail
it.
Retail banking.
Okay.
You know, with, at that time, it was Central Bank of the South.
Okay.
It's changed names several times since. But I knew when I was there that wasn't exactly what side of the banking world I was going to be on.
Okay.
I'd come from the insurance world.
Yeah.
And at that time, banks were getting into the annuity business and through Protective Life up here in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And so I was already licensed.
Okay.
So I kind of got picked to lead the annuity department for the bank and train all the other branch managers on how to sell annuities. Everything was going great. I mean, prospecting is the hardest thing about insurance. It is. But yeah. In the banking world, we had a list of CD customers this tall.
Yeah.
And we could just go, well, they didn't think it out real well because we were making money hand over fist. And they came in and said, you can't make more than the president. We're going to have to rescale your commission structure. So that was a punch in the gut.
So you were killing it. And they came back and said, you're making too much money. Mm-hmm. We got to restructure it.
Yep. And that happened multiple times. And so I thought, oh, well, I kind of know where this is going.
Yeah.
You know, they want to make all the money and they're giving me all the prospects and I get that. So it was kind of not a clearly defined exit strategy.
Sure.
But it was kind of like, okay, where do you go from here? Headhunter found me. I got into the medical supply business. Traveled all over the state of Alabama and the Southeast doing that for a little bit, primarily calling on nursing homes.
Okay.
All right.
You're selling med device? Like, what are you selling?
Third-party billing and supplies for that. Everything a nursing home needs, from syringes to diapers, you name it.
Got it.
You know, we were a provider of.
Okay.
And so I had a big territory.
Yeah.
Did very well, earned trips and all that. Well, they consolidated the territories. And yeah, after about a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah.
I was the newbie.
Last man in, first man out.
Yeah. That LIFO. That's one thing about accounting I wished I'd forgotten.
Sure, you know, doubt.
Last in, first out.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
So that happened. And so now I'm thinking, what do I do?
Yeah, where are you going now?
Yeah. And so got back into the insurance business. Really didn't want to.
Sure.
But then a friend of mine came up to me and said, hey, you'd be a good banker. And I went, I've been there, done that.
Yeah.
T-shirt. But he said, no, I mean, you'd be a good commercial lender. I said, I don't know anything about that. He goes, you know business.
Yeah.
You've run a business. You know how.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and during this time also, my wife and I started a rehab company, and I ran the back office of that.
When you say rehab, what do you mean?
There are three disciplines in therapy, OT, PT, and ST.
Yeah.
Occupational therapy, physical therapy, and speech therapy.
Okay.
And so we knew that space, and I was kind of helping some people in that area anyway. And so I got the opportunity to start contracting people out.
Mm.
You know, it was kind of bizarre. I went home to my wife one day. I said, I got some good news and some bad news.
Mm.
And she goes, what's that? I said, well, the good news is we got our first contract with the rural hospital right up the road. Okay, what's the bad news? I said, we got to find a physical therapist fast because I told them we had them.
Oh, my gosh. That's right. Do you do this? Yeah, we do that.
Yeah,
holy crap.
This. Yeah, it's always yes.
Exactly. That's right. Okay.
So we grew that.
Yeah.
And That went really well.
Okay.
Right? And then after doing that, the friend of mine said, you'd be a good banker. You've run a business. You've helped your brother-in-law build houses. You've done this. You've done that. You've got a pretty good eclectic understanding of business. And I thought, okay. I joined Colonial Bank at the time. And the best thing that ever happened during that time is my best friend, who I'd known since junior high school, he got hired at the same time.
Mm.
Now, he was a killer credit guy. He understood credit like there's no tomorrow.
Wow.
I understood people. And so we made a really good
really
team.
Really good team.
He didn't really like going out and about. I loved going out and about. So I'd go hunt it, kill it, and bring it back to him and say, what do we do with this? And so every deal that I saw was a good deal at that time because we had to do it, had to make it happen. I learned a very valuable lesson at that point, Thomas, and that was my buddy, who we've been roommates in college, he looked at me and said, if you need an answer now, it's no. But if you give me a chance to dive in and figure it out, it can go to a maybe and a potential yes. In other words, tap the brakes, slow down. Not everything is as good as it appears, and not everything is as bad as it appears.
Yep. My boss in college, I was coaching college football, he said that. He said after a game, he'd win, and he'd go, hey, boys, it's never as good as it seems, but it's never as bad as it seems either. Mm-hmm. Saying, like, we won the game, and we think it's great. But it's usually, God, there's a lot of mistakes.
You left something on the table.
And the same thing, you get beat. But, man, we made some progress in these X number of areas.
Yep.
So I totally understand that phrase. So tell me what's next.
It was like I went into banking. I had an uncle that was a banker, and he was a commercial lender. And it just kept resonating in my mind that if you're going to get into banking, get in on the lending side.
Okay.
That's where the bank makes all the money.
Right.
And that's where you can be a haymaker, a rainmaker.
Sure.
So that was my goal. But I knew getting in there, I wasn't going to be the best if I didn't put myself around really smart people.
Absolutely.
I told the guy I'd come work at the bank I made some conditions, but I was really in no position to make conditions. But I just said, I want to get better. He goes, okay, what does that look like? I said, I want to go to banking school. And he goes, okay, so when do I sign up? He goes, let's learn the ropes first. Yeah. Prove who you are and why I brought you on board, and I'll get you in banking school.
Okay.
And I told him, I said, I don't want to just go to the retail banking school. I want to go to either Stonier or LSU. And I wound up going to LSU's banking school. After 1 year into the bank, they sponsored me to go down. And it was a 3-year program.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew at that point, if I could get that behind me, I would have an elevation of credibility and success, regardless of where I was, whether I was with bank A, B, or C.
Mm-hmm.
Little did I know that that was going to be a major stepping stone for me down the road when I had my own company.
Mm.
Because of that credibility side.
So how long were you in like commercial banking before you had your own company?
Probably 5 years, 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
And I was with big banks.
Yeah.
And then community banks.
Right.
And then I went to work for a bank that was moving into Montgomery that wanted to start an LPO, a loan production office, and they picked me to do it. And I was going to be the president of the bank once we became brick and mortar. I thought, this is it.
Yeah.
I'd gotten to where
bank president.
Amen.
Yeah.
You know, amen. And so I'd gotten there. 1 year later, I wasn't there anymore.
Mm.
But it had nothing to do with me. It was at the bank that I was working for got bought. All right. And I'd been through enough mergers and acquisitions scenarios in banking school and in real life to know that when you're being acquired, you don't have a lot of bargaining power.
Yeah.
And so odd man out.
Yep.
You know, again.
Again.
Life up.
All
right. So I'm thinking, okay. Here's another character lesson.
Yeah.
All right, but I'm good. I'm strong. Right. I can get through this. What I didn't know at that time, Thomas, was where I was going, how I was going to get there.
Yeah.
I couldn't go back to the bank I used to work
for. Now, how old were you at the time?
Mid-40s.
Wow.
3 kids, private school.
But during those times, though, one of the things you said when we were eating that day is the relationships you had made during those years of working at the banks. I mean, those people.
And grad school.
Those people were like, they were dealing with Bert. They weren't dealing with the bank.
That's correct.
They, wherever Bert was at, they followed you because of the relationships and the things that you could do.
That's exactly right. Now, to go along with that, they would follow me, but where was I? I wasn't with the bank anymore. Yeah. So what could I do for them?
Yep. What was the solution?
I had a very, very wise man come up to me. Well, he was a board member of the bank that I was working for, that I was no longer working for. I called him and I said, I need to pick your brain. I need your help. Make a long story short, Thomas, he looked at me sitting across the table just like this. He goes, you don't need another job. I went, what do you know that I don't know?
Yeah.
He goes, you don't need another job. You need to figure out what it is you enjoy doing, then figure out a way to get paid for it. Then you have a calling, not a job. And he gave me the book by Max Lucado, The Cure for the Common Life.
Right.
I mean, it's finding your sweet spot, Thomas. It's
sure.
finding your purpose. It's finding what makes you get up in the morning
right.
to go. I read the book, kind of went back and forth going, Lord, do you want me to be a social worker? Is that what it is? I love helping people.
That's right.
Nothing wrong with a social worker, but come on, you gave me this skill set. You gave me this drive. You gave me this hunger. You gave me this willingness to just keep going.
Right.
But what do I do with it? So I just pondered.
Yeah.
Prayed. Wondered. Mm. Kept reading. And I'm not a big reader.
Yeah.
And then it hit me. My business model was already there.
Sure.
I just didn't know it. Now, back up a little bit and go to that bank that I was the president of.
Right.
I brought in a boatload of loans for them. They didn't do many of them.
Yeah.
So I called my buddies that I knew at other banks and from LSU's banking school. Well, hey, I got a good deal for you. If it's so good, why are you sending it to me?
Yeah.
They wound up doing every one of them. Now, what did that tell me?
Now, let me go back. Let's talk logistics. How are you making money on that? So you don't work at a bank.
I didn't.
You weren't making money.
I couldn't.
Okay.
If I'd have sent that loan to somewhere else and gotten paid, I'd gotten fired on the spot.
But you weren't working at a bank.
I was at
the time. Oh, at the time. Okay.
I was at the time.
Okay.
My bank wouldn't do it. So I...
sent it to the other guys.
I was so customer-oriented and so driven to help those people that I made sure they got taken care of.
Okay, so let's go back. You're at the bank. You're at the bank. And then all of a sudden, your bank won't do this loan, but you know that this is a good loan and you want to help Johnny. So you call Rick down the road at XYZ Bank and you say, hey, go see Rick. He's going to help you.
Right. It's exactly what I did.
Mm.
All under the understanding that eventually my bank was going to do something, then they'd come back to me because I helped them. Well, that just didn't work. Now, you fast forward to when the guy I was meeting with, the board member who told me I didn't need a job.
Yeah.
I didn't have a job at that point. I'd been let go. That's when it all hit me that I can do this, but how? Yeah. How do I do this? Because if I'm on a, if I'm at a bank, I know the committee.
Yeah, sure.
I know how to get a loan prepared for loan committee. How do I get that loan prepared when I don't have a bank and I don't know anybody on that?
Correct.
Committee?
Yeah.
So I found a software out of a group in California. And I, the best way to describe it, Thomas, it was like LendingTree for businesses. Now, that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So they've got stuff like that now. But that was kind of like...
cutting edge at the time.
It really was.
Yeah.
And so the only problem was they wanted $3,500 for the software.
Right.
Your boy didn't have it.
Yeah. So how'd you get the $3,500?
I knew I didn't have it.
Yep.
And I didn't have a credit card I could put it on.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to thinking, okay, who believes in me? So I went back to a buddy of mine that I had been a t-ball coach for my son, and he had a son his age too.
Okay.
Well, he was a sponsor of the team.
His business would put his name on the back of the jersey.
That's exactly right.
I got you. Okay.
Right. So he sponsored the team, and I got to know him. He was a huge guy. I mean, just good old fella.
Yeah.
You know, he ran he was a tree surgeon.
Yeah.
And very successful at what he did. He was my sponsor, and I helped his son a lot. That guy knew business, but he didn't know baseball.
Mm.
I knew baseball because I'd played all through
That's
college.
Right.
So I'm now helping this kid with the fundamentals of ground ball, base running, all the little things that you do.
Sure.
But it was something I was passionate about, and I saw ability in him, so I started working with him. He came up to me one day. Remember, I just met this guy. He said, how long are you going to keep coaching? I went, well, what do you mean? He goes, I'll sponsor you as long as you keep coaching.
Yeah.
I went, Chris, we hadn't even played the first game yet.
Yeah.
He goes, I don't care. I just appreciate what you're doing for my boy. All right.
There
so I went back to him. All right. Now, remember, I met this guy on the t-ball field.
Sure.
Then I became a banker. Then I got to work with him, and he was phenomenal at his business, but there were some key elements in his business that he wasn't real good at. And he came up to me, he goes, hey, I want to buy $500,000 piece of equipment. I went, okay, no problem. Give me your tax returns. He goes,
He's old school cash guy.
Old school
cash guy. He's got $300,000, $400,000 in the back of his mattress or whatever.
Wherever.
That's right. Okay.
Now, had rental houses out the wazoo.
Yeah.
All right. He knew what he was doing. Very successful in business. And so I told him, I said, okay, here's what we're going to have to do. So I showed him some things that he was going to have to do in order to show the proper documentation that he could sustainably handle that much debt with the cash flow of his business.
Sure.
So we worked through that. He bought the equipment, and it was just like, and that equipment allowed him to make so much money with the production of it. And it was a massive wood chipper.
Mm.
You know, it was, you could take it anywhere. I mean, it was massive.
Yeah.
Then he bought more. And more. And I continued to bank with him.
Hmm.
So I knew I helped him. All right. So I went back to him because he had always told me, is there anything ever I can do for you, let me know.
Yeah.
I went back to him. I said, hey, man, remember?
He goes,
yeah, I remember. And he goes, I got an idea. He goes, okay. And so I told him what I was going to do with the software and what I needed. He goes, okay, what do you need? I said, I need $3,500. And there was this pause. And I'm thinking, oh, no.
Yeah, sure.
Where do I go from here?
Yeah.
He goes, I just got one question. I said, what's that? He goes, big bills or small bills?
That's right. Man.
And I went, oh, my gosh. So we met in a parking lot of a bank.
Yeah.
And it didn't look like a normal transaction.
No doubt.
He's handing an envelope full of money out the window. I'm taking an envelope full of money out the window. I went back. I bought the software, closed that loan, the first loan I did. So with a $3,500 gift from a friend that I'd helped so many years ago, he paid it forward and helped me.
Yeah.
And so I closed that first loan, made $27,500 on that first loan.
And Amen.
He said, let's do it again. Mm-hmm. And I went, here's your money back. He goes, no. I could never repay you for what you did for me.
That's good.
And so that was a lesson for me too.
Yeah.
Never forget who helped you.
Sure.
And always be looking for a way to get back.
So 2005, you're doing this. You put this thing in the software, and then what?
And then it created all the ratios. I'm able to upload pictures, and I send it into the software. And then what they would do is they would generate, through their connections and their software and their algorithms or whatever, they would match lenders that indicated they liked that asset class. They liked those ratios. They liked the location, all those things. And then it would ask me, we've got term sheets. All right. Yeah. So then how many do you want? Well, Thomas, I clicked, I want them all. Well, before I knew it, I had 25 term sheets come through on that first deal. And I'm over there going, yeah. All right. Now, that created a whole nother problem because then I had to respond to every one of those. All right.
Wow.
Now, where did I go with that? All of a sudden, I had people calling me, lenders calling me that had responded to that deal. Now, they didn't get it. Only one lender
got it. One guy got it, yeah.
But they're calling me going, what else you got? What else you working on? You know, you got anything in this area or this asset class or whatever? And I'm like, holy cow. You know,
what an investment. $3,500.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Incredible.
Yes. And so it was life-changing.
Yeah, sure.
But it was also, Thomas, I got to be honest with you. When that first check came in for that first loan that I did,
yeah,
I didn't want it direct deposited. I didn't want it wired. I wanted a paper check. And so when that paper check came in, I wanted to hold it and I wanted to see it.
Yeah.
I wanted to celebrate it. So it came by FedEx. I met the FedEx guy at the mailbox and I ripped that thing open. And the FedEx guy goes, somebody's been waiting on this for a while. I went, you have no idea.
Yeah.
So I ripped it open, looked at it, and there it was, Barron Associates, $27,500. And there was nothing.
Yeah.
It was an empty feeling.
Sure. I should feel better than this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Where's the aha?
Yeah, sure.
And I thought, this is not fun. And so now I got to put a smile on and go back in the house and, you know, tell my wife, we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel it.
Yeah, sure.
Because that wasn't the driving force, Thomas. So then I had to go back to the book, The Cure for the Common Life by Max Lucado. I had to go back and replay, where is my aha moment? Because I wasn't feeling it. And so I went back to when I went into that client's office, spread out those term sheets all over that conference room table, and he looked at him. He goes, all of these are for me? All of these people want my deal?
Yeah.
Bert, what would I do without you? You're my guy.
Yeah.
Because there was competition, and I was competing with
another back in the guy. Day, there was a lot of competition.
Yeah. And so when I heard that, there was affirmation that I had helped him get something that he couldn't have gotten on his own.
Yeah, sure.
So now I get back in my truck. I leave out of there, pull around the corner, get where nobody can see me. That's when I had my aha moment. That's when I was fulfilled. I helped somebody. Did I want to do it for free? Did I like the money that came in? But the money was a byproduct of what I'd been called to do.
Money was a byproduct of you helping the people.
It's just a great
byproduct. You know, it's not a pat on the back. It's like, hey, this is your fee, and you deserve these dollars.
Right. And the thing is, normally a bank will charge a fee to do a loan. I was getting the fee.
Yeah, sure.
To do the loan. It was just like, okay,
yeah.
How fast can we scale this?
So tell me about the growth of that.
It just went gangbusters from that point forward because all the lenders now knew who I was. And now they're telling me, they're not asking me what I have. They're telling me, go find me this because that's what they wanted in their portfolio.
That's they go find me this asset class. Go find me in this area, amount of money.
It got so defined that not only just find me a hotel, find me a hotel in this location on the interstate, this brand that is not an outdoor property. They knew what they wanted. I just went up down the interstate knocking on hotel doors.
What was that conversation like?
Hey, when's the last time? May I speak to the owner?
Yeah.
Well, sure. What's this about? Well, I just want to know when's the last time somebody gave them a $150,000 raise and increased their net worth by $7 million.
Pretty good pitch.
Yeah. Well, most of them were Indians. And boy, I tell you what, they came out from behind that tinted glass really quick. And then I thought, because I knew they had SBA debt, and I knew I could cut their interest expense by a certain percentage, and that certain percentage on that amount of debt increased their net income.
You cut their percentage rate from 7 to 5. At that point, they got another $150,000 in their pocket that they were spending on interest because it's a $6 million loan.
And I took that loan from full recourse with the SBA.
To non-recourse. Holy crap.
Oh yeah.
So you were creating some Raven fans.
Oh my goodness. It was then I'm not having to make any more calls. they're going back to their office because they're all related and they have such a network.
Yeah.
And then they would get on the phone and then they'd come back out and says, I need you to go to meet my uncle, my brother, my so-and-so or whatever.
Mm.
And I would call Donna, yeah, my wife, and said, I'm not going to be home tonight. Where are you? Well, I'm going to be staying in this hotel because I got to go this much further north tonight. I got to go this much further west. I got to go this, because that's where they were sending me.
Mm.
And when I say it was like taking candy from a baby.
So easy. Did it have anything to do with the way the market was in 2005, 2006, with them giving away money in the ways that they did?
Yes, but the assets still had to make sense.
Sure.
It had to be there. Now, what was crazy, Thomas, is that there was a shift where they would say, and these were insurance companies primarily that I was doing business with, big ones. They would say, okay, we're finished with hospitality. We need some climate control storage. And I said, okay, there's quite a few of them that are coming out from under SBA construction debt. We don't care. Get me. I said, well, don't you want a trailing 12? You know, which 12 months of their previous income and expenses. They said, no, just give me a trailing one. We'll forward it.
Wow.
We'll interpolate the difference.
30 days of expenses and income.
And I thought, okay, this doesn't make sense.
Okay, let's go back to this. So we're coming up on 2008.
Yes, we are.
Okay, we're coming up on that, but you're rolling. Making money. Okay.
Ginning money.
So let me ask you this. You go from making a decent salary to being unemployed to starting this and making some good money. Let's step away. How did you invest your money at the time? Did you invest any of the excess? Because you were making a pretty good bit of money. Did you have any excess, and how did you invest it?
I did not invest it at that time,
mm-hmm,
because, and there was rationale. First thing I would do is tithe. Then I would put aside what I knew I owed in taxes.
Okay.
And then I would just keep a reserve account. And my reserve account was right, wrong, or indifferent.
Yeah.
It was like, this can't always last. I was right on the verge of buying my first 5 or 6 rental properties because I had the money.
Yeah.
But at that time, they didn't have the type rental property financing that we have right now.
Sure.
It was all tax returns. It was everything.
Tradition.
You got to qualify. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, remember also, I started my company in 05, and we didn't make much money that first year. So I'm just now getting into my second year of making money. And I knew banks, because I'd been there, they wanted
three years
tax returns, financial statement, all of this. And I wasn't quite there yet, but yeah, I was preparing for it. So, long answer to say, my money was sitting in the bank in multiple accounts.
Yeah.
I had not made any investments. It was an answer to prayer. I'd have lost every bit of it when 08 hit. I wouldn't have had the money because renters would have moved out.
Yeah.
Properties would have been
devalued. Properties went down. Yeah. I remember that.
And so it was a hard time. You know.
What did you do when that hit? So, your income went to next to nothing. So what happened?
My income went to nothing only because loans weren't closing. But you got to remember, my pipeline was robust.
Right.
So I was never panicking because I was always of the mindset, okay, Mr. Prue, Mr. Countrywide, Mr. Whoever, if you won't do it, move out of the way. The guy right behind you will. So I would just move that guy out of the way and said, okay, I appreciate you. Thank you for the quick no, but you got to move out of the way because the next.
Because I got to get it. Yeah.
Because at that time, nobody knew what was happening. We were just thinking, it's just a 30-day blip. We got to figure this out. Well, I got a pipeline. I'm not worried about it. I got reserves. I've got money. Okay, I can handle a 30-day blip. A 60-day blip. A 90-day blip.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's ready for a 10-year blip.
Sure.
Loans just dried up. Banks failed. Everything.
So what did you do? This, I mean, we're sitting there, 2005 do fine, 6 and 7 do pretty good. First part of 8 do fine.
Up until October.
First part of 8, so we're 2.5 years of rocking and rolling pretty good. So then what'd you do? I mean, did you think you were just going to kind of hang and then recover? So if you realized, hey, I can't recover, what did you go do?
When we realized that banks weren't lending anymore and they were closing faster than we could do, my partner and I, my buddy, remember the guy I was telling you about at Colonial Bank?
Yeah.
I brought him on board with me to help me because we were a team. Mm-hmm. So we were ginning money, having a blast. And so we kind of pivoted at that point going, okay, if banks are holding assets that they've got to get rid of, let's go find people that'll buy them. You know, let's take them off the assets. Because my buddy had a very unique skill set in workouts and helping the bank get through a workout scenario of a bad loan.
Okay.
Well, all of a sudden, there's bad loans everywhere.
Oh, everywhere.
According to everybody else.
Sure.
Now, these people weren't missing payments. They were just bad loans because the value went down.
Underwater.
That's right. And so the banks were having
to I had one.
Banks were having to reserve for them.
Yeah.
And the banks didn't have the liquidity to reserve. So therefore, they're being shut down and they're filing. Buy this charter, because these guys are not solvent.
I bought a house in Atlanta in 2005 for $150,000. I could have sold it in 2006 for $175,000 because the same house was going for sale. 2008 hit, the houses were selling for $96,000. Mm-hmm. So I owned that house for 9 years and had to pay $16,000 at closing because it never recovered. Mm-hmm. 6-7 years later, it never recovered even back to what I owed.
We went through that same scenario.
But I didn't default.
Yes. Well, most of these people didn't either.
Yeah.
They just went up and said, hey, look, you're asking me to write my loan so that your loan to value is in good place so that you don't have to reserve like the auditors are telling you to reserve them. The only way I can do that is I got to bring $150,000 to the table just so your loan gets back in
good standing.
Loan to value standing.
Yeah.
Knowing I never missed a payment.
Sure.
But yet I got to do that. Now,
wow.
Imagine if you own one property, you could probably do that. But most of the commercial real estate guys didn't just own one property.
They owned a bunch.
So what they were doing were, hey, here are my keys. I'm not going to fight you. Yeah, you can have it back. So they were turning them
banks in. Owned tons and tons. And I talked to buddies. I had buddies that were really shrewd during the time. And mm-hmm. and they were buying houses, Bert.
Oh, absolutely.
Bert, they were buying houses for $9,000, $10,000, and $15,000.
Oh, I know.
They were putting renters in. They were fixing whatever. Cash out. I mean, it was bananas.
Well, it all goes back to cash is king. And if you properly leverage something from the beginning.
Properly leverage. Huge.
Then that helps you weather storms. It's not an end-all to every scenario. But what was happening was folks were, during that time from 05 to 08, where you said banks were lending kind of like stupid money.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of prudent lending going on.
Right.
And so they were saying, hey, look, man, you're getting 70% LTV over here. We can do 80. We can do 85. We can do 90. We can do 95. Wow. We'll do 100%.
100% finance.
Yeah. Interest only.
Yeah.
Because we know you're not going to keep this. And the value is going to keep going up. So we're okay.
Right. Got people in trouble.